Comic Timing is a proud member of the Comics Podcast Network.
Welcome to episode 135 of Comic Timing, a comics podcast devoted to the average comic book fan from the average comic book fan. Join in as a rotating panel of guests and myself, Ian Levesine, discuss whatever comes to mind, time after time, here on Comic Timing. Brent's missing from the intro because he's missing from the episode, but I replaced him with Sean Pryor and Jamal Igel, and that's what counts. We talk Kickstarter, Molly Danger, and more Kickstarter. So listen, here now, Comic Timing. Hey there, folks. My name's Ian Levesine, and welcome to episode 135 of Comic Timing. This might be the most episodes of Comic Timing coming out in a month in probably about 2 years, because we have a glut of episodes, and we're all getting them out, because I'm being a responsible human being. And Brent Cassino is somewhere else, so he's not on this episode. But at least Sean Pryor is here, or as I am going to call him, at least in this intro here, the Irish sensation, Seanacy O'Pryor. Sean, how are you?
I'm doing okay. I'm doing all right. I don't know where the Irish sensation came from. I've been told that I have some Irish in my family. I've been told that, but I don't see it helping me much in the terms of either boxing or playing for Notre Dame. But but you know what? I appreciate the compliment, but you know I'm still black and proud. So go.
All right, that's fine. That's fine. Hey, you can pack back the alky.
Used to. Not anymore, man. I mean, it's now, you know, I drink more than like two or three beers, and now I need to go to bed or take a nap. The times have changed now. Mm-hmm. When we hold those Comic Timing super show sessions, see, that's a whole different thing. Mm-hmm. I am fueled by rage and hate, and I have a lot of things on my chest I need to like get off my chest, but you know, I'm not here to talk about that. Well, you know,
tell them why you mad, son. Tell them why you mad.
I'm tired, son. I'm tired.
Enough is enough, and it's time for a change. Bringing it old school.
Hey, for real, wait till 2013 when me and our other special guest that's on the line right now, Julian Lytle and Martheus Wade, all have a panel at San Diego Comic-Con. Oh, it's called, God. Tell Them Why You Mad. And we're going to come in, and we're going to do it hip-hop style, too. We're going to have a DJ. We're going to have, like, a smoke machine. So, like, the DJ going to introduce everybody. Like, just one person at a time. We come through the smoke like it's a professional wrestling show. I'm carrying a championship belt. We got microphones. We're going to be talking about something we'll just be talking about something for like a moment, and then the DJ will just cut in a remix, and we just start singing, the crowd get hyped, and then we just put the mic back down, start talking again like shit is normal. It is going to be the greatest thing ever. Tell them why you're mad.
And to tie it with the last episode that I did, then somebody will bring up the new Amazing Spider-Man movie, and Julian will just drop the mic and walk away. So the other guest on the call, he's a lot more jolly than Sean. A little less on the angry side, but he knows how to be angry when necessary. But hopefully that won't happen on this episode, because I know how to talk to his softer side. Mr. Jamal Igel, how are you, man?
I'm good, Ian. What's going on?
Not too much. It's actually cool enough in the apartment where I can have the windows open and get a little bit of a breeze going, so I'm not absolutely toasty in this room of death that can often be in summertime.
Yeah, it's New York in the summer. I know, you know, Sean, all due respect, you're down in Kentucky. I get it. It's the South. Gets hot. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't get as humid as it does in New York.
Oh, I know, y'all, because y'all stacked on top of each other.
Exactly.
Not only are we stacked on top of each other, I live four blocks away from the Gowanus River.
Ooh. Yeah.
And that's a stink. It's worse than high tide.
Oof.
It's how you would imagine a toxic Avenger would smell.
Damn. That's rough.
That's how bad it is. They keep talking about how they're going to clean it up.
Yeah, right.
They put in a pedestrian walkway down there. Mm-hmm. With, like, you know, they redid it. I've seen pictures of it. It's very nice. I will not walk there because I don't know what's going to crawl out of the river.
Right. Yeah, why would you even do that? I mean, like, if yeah, you might put a nice walkway on there, but hell, if it smells like the Gooch's balls, why even do it?
Oh man, see, that's why I love talking to the two of you, because I get lines like that. Oh dear! And now I'm just reminded of the half submerged submarine on the other side of Coney Island, like on the beach that nobody goes to because it's usually infested with homeless people and old hypodermic needles.
Yeah,
but there's that half submerged submarine from the time that this dude thought, "Hey, I'm gonna take a submarine out to Coney Island. It's gonna be awesome." Oh wait, there's nowhere near enough water in Coney Island for this submarine to go anywhere. Well, I'm just gonna abandon it halfway. And it just continues to rust out there to this
day. And nobody will do anything about it. The city can't cart it away.
It's a freaking landmark at this point.
I know. But it's like the parachute ride, you know? So it's a landmark, but it's, you know, I just keep imagining that it's just going to topple over one day. It's just going to ride out from the base.
that'll be a scene in Independence Day 2.
Yeah, I know.
See, at least, you know, I can honestly say, like, in Kentucky, yes, we have racism, but, like, at least we don't have, like, half-submerged submarines and parachute rides to nowhere. So, just take it, you know, as you will. Go.
I will not only take it as it will, but we'll actually get into the conversation of this episode, because if we keep talking about humidity in Coney Island, it's going to be 2 hours and we have not even going to be talking about anything. Right. So, Mr. Pryor and Mr. Eigel are involved with a joint collaboration with Action Lab that just launched about five days ago at this point?
No, it's 7 days.
7 days. 7 days. Okay, 7 days ago at this point. I don't know what day it is, man. Screw me.
It's okay.
And that would be Molly Danger over at Kickstarter. And I know you have been in the works with this thing for 847 years at this point.
It feels like it sometimes.
Really? So, first off, congrats on getting it off the ground and getting the Kickstarter going and everything. And so far, so good.
Yeah, so far, so good. At the last count, I think we were somewhere in the area of almost 12,000.
Yes.
Nice. Yeah, we're pretty close to 12,000 after 7 days, which is actually a pretty respectable amount. Doesn't stop me from, like, you know, daily agita at this point, but
agita.
Yeah, you know,
at least you feel verklempt.
No, I mean, the thing about, you know, running a Kickstarter is, and some, I forget who said it to me, but, you know, running a Kickstarter is a marathon. It is not a sprint.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you know,
even if it is, you know, we have a relatively short campaign at 30 days, but even at 30 days, mm-hmm. my days are, on top of just my regular work, my days are just full of, you know, social media and Molly Danger related stuff and, you know, checking the numbers and doing updates every day and getting the word out, trying, you know, with Sean's helping with the, you know, the generous help of a lot of people.
It helps to have friends in high social media places.
Yes, it does. It does indeed. It, you know, it's, and friends in, you know, surprising places too. And I guess I shouldn't be surprised, mm-hmm. but at the same time, it's, you know, when Brian Hitch retweets your Kickstarter, it's kind of nice.
Well, I mean, after all, you are former DC exclusive artist Jamal. I had to get it out at least once.
I know. That's okay.
No, but that got, you know, that did get your name out there, that you were on the DC books for as long as you were. People at least are familiar with the name Jamal Eigel, and when they see a project like this, they're like, "Oh, Jamal's doing something. Let's go ahead and back it."
It's been very cool, and it's actually it's you know, watching the backers roll in, you're just kind of like, "Wow, thanks, guys." I don't want to, you know, say who, you know, who's been backing the project so far, but mm-hmm. you know, it's you know, people that I've worked with, people that I haven't worked with, and people that I have done a lot of drinking with over the past 20 years. So
at least 260 people have shared a beer with Jamal Igle.
Exactly.
And hopefully by the time you hear this podcast, a lot more.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Yes, absolutely.
Definitely. So who I'll direct this towards Sean. So who approached who, or was it a mutual thing?
It was one of those things where, like you know, Ian, like you had said before, Molly Danger was something that had been in the works with Jamal for like a very, very long time. Mm-hmm. And he took the opportunity to put it out on Kickstarter. But when he started to talk about Molly Danger, he started to post like little images and, you know, things about Molly on Facebook and on Twitter. Some of the guys at Action Lab got a hold of me. Mm-hmm. And they said, have you, you know, considered talking to Jamal about you know, possibly, you know, publishing Molly Danger with Action Lab? And so I said, well, I don't know. I said, I haven't done that. And I, you know, recall the situation, like, say, for instance, with Womanthology, which was something that was funded by the Kickstarter, but IDW, you know, distributed the book.
Right.
And so like, you know, the guys were talking about it, and they said, well, let's see, you know, what, you know, if Jamal is interested in, you know, Action Lab, Molly Danger coming to Action Lab, because at Action Lab, pretty much, you know, 98% of our titles are creator owned.
Sure.
You know, the only thing not being creator owned at the time was Globworld, which was a licensed property. Mm-hmm. And that was like just exclusively digital, and it never hit print. So I emailed Jamal, and, you know, I started emailing him, sent him a nice formal email, because you know how you got to do. I mean, I can't be all street and ghetto all the damn time.
Hey, what's you know, up, Igle? Get your shit over here right now.
You know, I can't be emailing him and be like, hey, man, listen, won't you, like, you know, bring Molly Danger over here? Thanks. P.S. Wu-Tang is for the children. See, that's not going to work. That's not going to work. But, I politely asked him. I said, you know, I heard that, you know, you're making Molly Danger. You're about to do a Kickstarter for it. Would you be interested in possibly, you know, having the book under the Action Lab banner? Mm-hmm. And you know, and Jamal can tell you, you know, the rest from here. But, you know, it was something he had told me, that was something that he was thinking about on our side too, because of, you know, what happened with Princeless, all the critical acclaim for Princeless,
right,
the Eisner nominations, the Glyph Awards that the book actually won, you know, and things like that. And so it was kind of like a hand in hand type thing. And I, you know, and like, I'm real glad to help Jamal in any way, shape, or form I can. I mean, a lot of people don't understand all the things that Jamal has, you know, done for me personally in helping me understand the business,
right,
and helping me understand some of the people in the business and how to, you know, deal with them. And it's really meant a lot to me. And I not only consider Jamal a friend, I consider him family. Now, I know in a situation like this, this is business. And it being business, my whole job for the month of August is to help him promote the Kickstarter, you know, right, using social media, using Twitter, using Facebook, emailing people that are interested in, you know, what Molly Danger is, you know, calling up friends of mine who aren't social media buffs that know about Kickstarter. You just all types of things, smoke signals, braille. I don't give a damn. You know, any way possible to spread the word, you know, doing interviews, trying to help Jamal get additional interviews for this Kickstarter. I'm just trying to help him blast out the message in as many ways as possible, not to annoy, but to inform and to keep it in the back of somebody's head.
Right.
That's my job. That's my job. Because like I told people before, if Jamal is successful with this Kickstarter, it's a big win for Jamal, and it's a big win for Action Lab. So, and I just want us all to win. So that's pretty much the origin in a nutshell.
So you're Paul Bear and he's the Undertaker.
Oh, come on, man. You can't be calling me Paul Bearer, man. You know, that dude was never in shape. I mean, like, you know, like, I, you know, I'm a tall dude. I'm 6'3", about, you know, 6'3", 205. And, you know, he was like about 5'10", 420. And,
oh, yes.
Yeah, he was walking around. No, man.
All right, fine, you know, fine. You're Barney, he's Ted.
That's cool. I can deal with that. Go ahead and run with it.
Yeah. Have you met Ted? And Jamal, I'm sure you could regale us with the history of Molly Danger. I know that you've already told it on PKD because I've listened to a little bit of that interview, and I don't want you to have to repeat yourself too much. But if you want to give folks a little bit of the story, the storied story of Molly Danger and what she's all about, that would be good for the folks listening out there in podcasting land.
Sure. Well, basically, the original idea for Molly Danger came out of a car ride, actually. It's me and a friend of mine, Rich Maurizio, and we were driving back from Pittsburgh Comic Con one year. It was 2001. And we're driving up 95. We're just, bouncing stuff back and forth because this is, before, things really, like, I'd been doing comic stuff for years, but didn't really have the presence, I guess, in the industry that I have now.
Right.
And so, we were, just like anybody else, just trying to figure out, what can we do to set ourselves apart from the pack. And Rich at the time had a small publishing company called Airwave Comics, and they've done like a lot. They did a couple of licensed books. They did like an I Dream of Jeannie book. And then you remember the Pamela Anderson TV show VIP?
Oh, yes. I remember that quite well. It usually came on around midnight in our neck of the woods, I'm pretty sure.
So he did one issue of a VIP comic, licensed VIP comic.
Nice.
Which, sort of, fell apart. But,
Just like
I mean, Rich
show.
And I have been, exactly. Rich and I have been friends for a long time, and we were at the time we were bouncing around ideas for an animation pitch. So we decided to go with trying to pitch a female character, and as we were talking about what we wanted to do, and it was a little bit at the time. It was when we first started talking about it, it was a little more James Bondian at first, and I had this name that popped in my head, and the name was Molly Danger.
Because you could totally hear that with like the deep movie voice, like Molly Danger.
Exactly, So, and as we're driving up back up to, because I'm dropping them off in Connecticut, so as we're driving back up to Connecticut, we're going back and forth. Should she be older? Should she be younger? And we finally settled on the idea of Molly as this 10-year-old hero. And the concept at the time was a little bit more otherworldly, I guess. In a way, it was more along the lines of sort of Amethyst Princess of Gemworld or Through the Looking Glass, where you weren't sure if, her alter ego's life was real, or she was really Molly Danger, and she was having these fantasies of being normal. And we started trying to put the animation pitch together, but ultimately just said, we're comic book guys. This is what we know.
Right.
We should do it as a comic book. So with every intention of doing it as a comic book, we put and Rich was finishing up the I Dream of Jeannie comic that he was doing through his company, and we put an ad for Molly Danger on the back of I Dream of Jeannie. Number one, we started working on the book. I had written a 22-page script, standard comic book script, had started penciling pages, and then I got busy. And I started doing freelance work for everybody, DC, for Marvel, for Image.
And you go with what pays first, of course.
Right, of course. So what happens is, you put it to the side and hope to get back to it at some point. And then I kept getting busier and busier, and it became, kind of obvious to the both of us that there was no way that I could write, draw, and get the book done in the time frame that we had originally set up. So we hired another artist, this guy named Jamal Peppers. And
Jamal.
Yeah, exactly. And this is when he was first getting into the business. And what ended up happening was Jamal did about five or six pages. based on my script and my layouts. And then he couldn't do it anymore.
Because he got a career.
Well, exactly. You know, we've got no money. We're trying to do this ambitious comic book project.
Oh, sure.
And it just all just sort of fell apart as we were working on it. So, you know, this takes us to about 2003. So, with every intention of getting back to Molly Danger, you know, we start reworking this, the concept again, start playing with the script again. And then, you know, I get involved with Jay Ferber, and we start doing Venture. And then Venture finishes prematurely.
As it goes.
As it goes. And before I even had a chance to think about getting back to doing Molly Danger, I get a call from Humanoids. So then I'm working for Humanoids for a year and a half. Then while I'm working for Humanoids, I get a call. I get the infamous call from DC.
Man, so it's just like rapid fire. Bam, bam, bam.
It was starting to become rapid fire. There wasn't enough time in between for me to even really think about doing any. And to be honest, after Venture, I was a little gun shy about doing creator owned.
Right.
So I start working on Firestorm for about a year.
I miss you, the real Jason Rush.
And then DC offers me an exclusive contract. And the next thing I know, it's 7 years later.
Yeah, because time just flies by that way sometimes, man.
It seems like it. It really does. So
to interject for a minute, like,
sure.
This is a guy who's been writing the same fucking Batman Beyond fanfic since 2002. I just wrote another chapter about two weeks ago, man. Like,
wait a minute. Time out.
Yeah.
Ian, how many years have I known you?
Less than that, but long enough.
Still, the fact that you have not told me this until right now,
dude.
I'm very disappointed in you for not telling me this, man. I'm disappointed.
Well, somebody hasn't been paying attention to my Facebook because I posted the link about 3 weeks ago. But you know,
man, I can't be on Facebook 24 hours a day. I got a job.
It's actually a Batman Beyond fanfic that is also a flashback, and it introduces Jason Todd into the animated universe.
Okay.
Yeah. What I did is I reversed personalities. I gave Jason Todd Tim Drake's personality since I gave Tim Drake Jason Todd's personality.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, all of his backstory and shit is pretty much Tim's. So, like, he has a family. He broke into the cave, that sort of stuff. And,
right.
And we're gonna go from there. But maybe by about 2015, I'll finish it.
And now I am verklempt.
Well, you should read it, Sean, because you will totally see the evolution of a teenager starting to write something to now. You know, like that's how long I've been writing this, and my writing style has evolved since then. But I'm not going to go back and rewrite everything. So you'll actually see somebody like mature, and that's kind of cool. In fact, I'm sure that you felt that same way a little bit about Molly Danger, Jamal,
since
it's gone through so many changes since the initial pitch. I'm sure you've had time to finesse it a little bit and change it with the change in your own style.
Well, absolutely. I mean, and not just, you know, visual changes, but as you said, you know, as you mature and as you become more experienced. Mm-hmm. In general, the story has changed. She as a character has not really changed. Mm-hmm. Like, and you know, I think that's really what appeals to me about her is that, you know, she was, you know, designed to be just, you know, good, or, you know, just a good person,
right?
And have a particular look. And I really, like, when I started, just to get back to the story a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay. So, you know, now in between, now I don't want to make this sound like, you know, I just decided to do this arbitrarily, because I didn't.
Right.
Basically, what happened was around 2010, I decided that I was going to pitch Molly Danger to a mainstream publisher.
Mm-hmm.
And not a comic book publisher, but to I ended up pitching it to Tor Books, mm-hmm. and to Abrams Comics Art, and heard butt kiss from both of them.
You could audibly hear the crickets.
Exactly. And yeah. You know, the Abrams thing was a little bit more disappointing because I had verbally pitched Abrams at a Baltimore Comic Con and was told specifically to send what I had.
Right.
So at that time I had completely reworked the story. The character design stayed the same, but the story itself had been, I didn't like the whole the wishy-washiness of whether or not her reality was sacrosanct, or you know, and I wanted to pare it down to a much more simpler concept, and I, you know, personally I think it works. And so I pitched it to Abrams, didn't hear back. Pitched it to Tor Books, didn't hear back. A year later, I decided to talk to a literary agent about it, and I pitched it to the literary agent, and she finally got back to me and said, "This is a wonderful comic book concept. I love the look. I love the look of the character. I think everything looks great. I don't know where to take this." Because all of the people that I know are looking for copies of Diary of a Wimpy Kid. Which is not Molly.
Oh, of course.
By any stretch of the imagination.
God. And I hate how trends like that break, but it's hard to I guess avoid that, because once something gets huge, everybody's like, yeah, let's jump on the bandwagon, as opposed to trying to make the next big thing.
Exactly. And I didn't hold it against her at all.
Sure.
As soon as she said that, I completely, you know, I've been in this business for a long time.
Yeah,
I completely understood where she was coming from.
Right.
And I was completely unwilling to alter the concept to fit that idea.
Right.
You know, it would have felt phony to me. That's not the story that I want to tell.
Yeah, you don't want to force something.
No, not at all. So, again, I end up putting Molly on the shelf for a little while longer. Then, when the word was starting to get out that my contract was going to be up with DC, I was approached by a couple of different people about doing a project with them and having it funded through this website called Kickstarter. I had never heard of Kickstarter at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Because I, you know, as plugged in as I like to think that I am, I am dense. I'm like, I hear about shit like 3 years later. I mean,
sometimes I'm like that, and other times I get lucky, man. Like I've been on Facebook since it required college email addresses, and I've been on Twitter since like the year it started. But
right.
But stuff like Kickstarter, just like you, I didn't hear about until at least like 6, 7, 8 months into the whole thing.
Right, right. And I'm a guy. I was on AOL like way back in the day.
2.7. All right. Yeah.
Oh no, I think I was like 1.5.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
So I was on AOL very, very early on, before most people even knew what an email address was.
Free so, floppy disks for weeks.
Are you kidding?
I used to work for CompUSA.
Oh my god!
Way back when, and when the magazine dude would come by and like rip all the old magazines and replace them with new ones,
mm-hmm.
He would have like a box full of leftover AOL floppy disks. So I'm like, okay, that's these 3 months of free service there,
yep.
And I'll reformat these and use these for school. And oh yeah, man, yeah. Time Warner's mad at me.
Hey, they weren't Time Warner yet at that point. So.
Oh, that is true. I'm sorry. AOL was mad at me.
Yes. You know, yes. So, yeah. Hey, come on. I got like a year and a half of free service off of them, just because whenever I would go to cancel the service, they'd be like, here, have a few free months on us. I'm like, okay, fine. And just
yes,
over and over
again. For all you youngins out there, AOL used to stand for America Online.
And now it stands for AOL.
O-L. Just like KFC used to be Kentucky Fried Chicken.
Yeah.
So,
and TLC used to be the Learning Channel.
Exactly.
And you don't learn
TLC. TLC stopped being the learning channel the moment that they started putting lizard lick towing.
and you know, baby Bobo or whatever the hell her name is.
Look, man, we're trying to keep it on the positive right now.
All right, all right. I'll get you. Well, rolling it back.
Roll it back.
Okay. So, Kickstarter. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, what the hell is Kickstarter and what is crowdfunding? I've never heard of this. So I started looking at the website, started investigating the website, and was just like, you know what? If I'm going to do something like this, it should be for something that I want to do.
Right.
And not, working on some, yet another writer's idea that I'm just coming in as the artist on. So I decided there and then that I was going to start putting together my own Kickstarter campaign, and I actually talked to a couple of people and sat down with some friends of mine out in the business and outside of the comics business, but in the business world, and trying to figure out what I should ask for, how much time I should go for in terms of the campaign. I started studying the website, and I have like 3 or 4 ideas that were in various stages of just various
maturing.
Stages of just different ideas, stuff that if I had given any of the others a little bit more of a push, I probably could have went with one of those.
Mm-hmm.
But it kept coming back to Molly. And I actually had friends of mine going, no, you should do this other idea. I think this will work better. And I was like, no, because you know why? Because Molly's stronger.
Molly was your firstborn.
Yes, Molly's my firstborn. Molly's not my firstborn, but that's another story for another day.
I've heard about your actual firstborns.
But so I started looking at the pitch for Molly, and really it fit everything that I had been feeling for a while, for a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
And everything that when ultimately what it comes down to is you guys know my daughter.
Yeah.
And she's really like, she's just starting to get into superheroes.
Mm-hmm.
She's starting to get into the stuff that the daddy's into.
Right.
About a week or two ago, it was in the morning, and we were in the bedroom, and Katie gets up, and she has this box of costumes, and one of the costumes that she has in the box is a Supergirl costume that
nice.
We got her for Halloween. So she and it's pink because it has to be pink.
Of course.
Of course. So she comes into the bedroom, and I forgot what it was she asked us. But then as she's walking out of the room, she goes, da, 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 da.
Wow. I could actually just hear Raph Suhu pause the podcast and go, yes! Yes!
but that's the thing, that's the thing. I have a 4-year-old daughter who is getting into superheroes,
right,
and loves the concept of Wonder Woman, but I can't give her the current Wonder Woman comic.
Gee, really?
And I can't even for her age, I can't even give her Gale stuff, and I love Gale stuff.
Yeah,
it's
just not her age range.
No, it's not, and there isn't. For younger readers, there isn't that gateway book
mm-hmm.
like we had when we were younger.
Yeah.
Right now. It seems like in this industry, it either has to be one or the other. It either has to be completely dark and completely serious and completely dire, and you know, people getting their arms ripped off or decapitations or you know what have you, which is fine. Which is fine for me at 40, but that's not fine for you know a 4 year old or an 8 year old or even a 10 year old. I mean, I don't care how you know dark and dire you know the world is supposed to be. There's a certain point where you know you have to kind of come back from that,
right? Have you heard of Little League, by the way?
Yes, I have. I love Little League.
Oh
actually.
My god! Yeah, no, because you talking about how there isn't one. Like, come on, DC, get a hold of these people. And make a frickin' comic, for Christ's sake. Like, it's awesome.
You're asking for forward thinking.
Yeah.
And, you know I love my DC brethren, and it's not on, trust me, it's not on the editorial level that you know, this stuff happens.
Right. I know. I'm aware, man. I'm aware. It's just, come on.
So, but that's the thing. It's, you know, I remember when I was 11 or 12, there used to be this store, this you know, usual bodega, mm-hmm. but you know, and it was about two blocks away because I went to IS-61 over on Empire Boulevard,
right?
And there, but they used to carry comics. I could walk down, you know, Flatbush Avenue, mm-hmm. right, you know, right before you hit Empire. And I could grab a copy of Marvel Saga, you know, or I could grab, you know, a reprint of, you know, the new Teen Titans or Tales of the Teen Titans,
yep.
or something. Or, you know, from that bodega, you know, that's where I got introduced to the Star Wars comics. That's where I got introduced to Alpha Flight. That's where I got introduced to the X-Men and, yep. Justice League and, you know, all this stuff. And that stuff was readable.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, I wouldn't be in the DC right now if not for the drugstore down the block from my dad's dog grooming shop that sold, this just says how much younger I am than you people, and I'm sorry, but I got my copy of Green Lantern 100 there with Kyle and Hal on the cover, and
right.
And Zero Hour I bought off the stands there, you know, and stuff like that just really got me into more than just the X-Men comics I was reading at the time. And
trust me, I'm not hating on you.
No, it's all good.
I will happily proclaim. I just turned 40. I am very happy to say it. So
you don't look a day over 39.
And you also have to consider, you know, even though, you know, we want to be, you know, progressive, right. when it comes to books nowadays, we want to have some form of progression. excuse me. There was a better balance many years ago as opposed to now. Some publishers have it down where there's, you know, progression and there's a balance of material for, you know, the 18 and up set, mm-hmm. and the all ages set. And then the kids set. Some publishers have that balance, but when we were growing up, we had that.
Yeah.
You know, whether it be like, you know, the books that Jamal said, yeah, there were still some mature readers books like The Question, mm-hmm. from O'Neill and Dennis Cohen.
Right.
And I read that as a kid. And the only reason, because I said, Dad, can I have this? And my dad like would open up the book. He looked through it. He's like, okay, you can have that. Go ahead. And he knew it was a mature readers book. But he let me read it. He let me read it, but I also read The Avengers, mm-hmm. and like The Turtles. And I'm talking about all the forms of the Turtles, because as we all know, the black and white Turtles were not for kids.
Yep. No.
They were not for kids. I read every last one of those motherfuckers. Every last one of them. Okay? And then I read the Archie version that was based on the television series. I read them both, and I was in seventh heaven. I had two different turtle worlds. You couldn't tell me jack shit, okay?
you know where I read the most of those, Sean? The dentist office.
See, because you ate all that pizza.
Yeah.
And it gets your teeth checked. But no, that's the whole thing. And that's, you know, going back to Molly. Molly is one of those things that will continue to bring that balance, you know, into comics, you know, whether right. No matter the format, you know, Molly Danger is a European sized graphic novel, and they're, you know, they're going to be a series of them. Now, granted, this this Kickstarter is for volume one, 48 pages, oversized hardcover. It's going to, you know, it's going to be beautiful, and I think this is something that people need to see, that people need to read, that people need to get behind. So, you know, so yeah, you can give your daughter or your son this book and everything be cool, or hell, you could pick it up and read it and just enjoy it and put it on your shelf and say, man, that's nice. You know, those types of things, bringing back the balance, because I'm not going to, like I said, I'm not going to sit here and say all books in the 80s were clean.
No.
That, you know, that was not the case. But there was that balance, just like in the 70s. In the 70s, you had those big black and white magazines, you know, Marvel magazines, and a lot of that stuff was not for kids. But you also had the regular comics. Same, you know, in the 80s, you had all various formats, all types of stories, all types of genres, and there was something for everybody. So no matter what, it was okay. And then that slowly started to dwindle. And yes, the markets have changed. You know, we've shrunk in the number of bookstores and, you know, number of comic stores. We've talked about this a number of times.
Yep.
Number of bookstores have dropped. You know, the only comic books that are actually in grocery stores are Archie. Mm-hmm. You know, if that. You know, the newsstand isn't really a haven for comics anymore. With the exception of possibly Archie, I know for a while Boom had their little joint for a minute.
Right.
But the venues for getting comics into people's hands have changed, and so that also affects how to get these things to people too.
Yep.
But you know, we can restore that balance, but it's going to take the work of more than it's going to take the work of everybody. It's not just you can't just blame the retailers, you can't just blame distribution, you can't just blame the publishers, the big publishers. It's a one big circle, and everybody can point at everybody, but guess what? It's going to come back around. So, right. You know, it's a joint effort to, exactly, to rebuild. And I think Molly is one of those things that can help rebuild that.
I know for myself, and Sean and I have talked about this before. For myself, it really ultimately became the idea of being an agent of change on a personal level. It kind of makes me sad a little bit that there's not a Claremont level X-Men book anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not talking, and when I say that,
you're talking
what
about
I
an
mean,
approachable book.
Exactly.
Yeah.
What I mean is that even though Claremont told some very mature stories in terms of content, the way that it was approached was done in such a way that it was accessible to all audiences, mm-hmm, that, you know, you felt comfortable giving that book to, you know, and at the time for me, you know, an 11-year-old. Lord knows that I didn't get all the subtext that was in there that I get now looking back at that, at, you know, especially like, you know, Dark Phoenix Saga and Days of Future Past.
Yeah.
But there was enough there in terms of content and the way that it was handled visually, that it was approachable, it was accessible, it was something that you can, and I think it's because of those things is part of the reason why that those runs on the book are still beloved by people. Because it's an accessible story. Because you're not looking for subtext automatically.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? You're not, you know, the subtext is there, and it's obvious, you know, as an adult, you know, I look at it now, and obviously, you know, there's a lot of subtext to what Claremont did.
Yeah.
Or, you know, not just Claremont. I mean, you know, you had, you know, Len Wein, you had Don McGregor, you had all of these guys who knew how to write an accessible superhero comic that could be enjoyed by younger readers. You know, Marv Wolfman, you know, is another perfect example. So many, you know, Bill Mantlo, especially, like, Bill Mantlo was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing about Molly for me. Molly, just to give you the audience a little bit about the story, Molly is the most powerful girl in the world. She is strong. She is talented. She's smart. She's capable. She is practically invulnerable. And as far as anybody knows, she's immortal. But she's also an extremely lonely girl because she's almost like a princess in an ivory tower. She lives in this world where there's action figures of her. There's merchandise all over the place. They use the money from all the merchandise sales to pay for the collateral damage to the city. So whenever she goes out on these missions, she's surrounded by images of herself. But at the same time, she doesn't have a secret identity. And she's kept in isolation because they tell her that because she's so much stronger than everybody else, it's not just dangerous for her to go out, but it's dangerous for other people because she's a target. She instantly becomes a target of the supermechs. Mm-hmm. You know, whenever she's ever had a public appearance in the past. So she spends most of her time locked up in a bedroom under guard at the Molly Danger Museum and Gift Shop, otherwise known as the Molly Dome.
Man, so this is just like, you know, at least with the Fantastic Four, there are four of them, you know?
Right.
So that even when they start feeling lonely, they still got their family dynamic going on.
Exactly. They still have each other. Molly doesn't have that. Molly, right. And she desperately wants those connections. And what happens is that she meets a new member of the DART team. DART, which is also stands for Danger's Action Response Team. a former police helicopter pilot named Austin Briggs. Austin has ulterior motives for joining DART. And his ulterior motive for joining DART is to create a relationship with Molly so that he can get closer to his stepson, Brian, who hates him. Hates him with a passion, mm-hmm. but is a major Molly Danger fan.
Gotcha.
So Austin breaks the cardinal rule of DART, which is you do not have personal contact with Molly. And he brings her home for dinner.
I assume the second rule is see the first rule.
Exactly.
Yeah, so he's breaking cardinal DART laws right there.
Exactly. And, you know, that's basically how things sort of pop off, and, you know, that's how that's the beginning of the story. It's not the whole beginning of the story, but it's definitely a big chunk. You know, there's more, you know, going on than meets the eyes, even on that level. So,
and what a shock that a big Superman fan like yourself has made a story about a stranger in a strange land. Not that I'm saying that's a bad thing, man, because that's the basis of a story right there.
Absolutely. It's the basis of a story. It's our lead in, but it's not the whole story. And, you know, that is ultimately the story of Molly Danger, is that journey. Here's the thing about Molly is I don't think of Molly Danger as a superhero comic. Mm-hmm. You know, I think of Molly Danger as a coming of age story that just happens to be about a girl who's a superhero.
Right.
And it's not just a coming of age story for her, but it's a coming of age story for several other characters. Because, like, for, you know, just to use Austin as an example, if there were a Molly Danger movie today and I were in charge of casting, Austin Briggs would be played by Owen Wilson.
Okay.
He's very much in that Judd Apatow click sort of mold. Mm-hmm. You know, kind of a baby man, kind of a hot dog, you know, says buddy a lot, you know.
Has a crooked nose. No, that's...
No, but, you know, and... But he is, you know, and as part of the story is a coming of age story for him as well, you know, because he has to learn responsibility. Even though he's been a police officer, he's the wrong, not, I don't want to say he's the wrong kind of cop, but he's definitely, they were very happy to see him leave the Coopersville police force.
So he still needs some severe maturity lessons.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And Molly, whether he likes it or not, is going to be the one to sort of shepherd that in.
Well, that it's great to have a 10-year-old teach a adult how to be an adult.
Well,
because that happens sometimes. Like, I mean, I have a good friend that has that as a 9-year-old, and sometimes she says things to me, and I'm like, "Damn it, you're right."
This is true, but this is also a 10-year-old who has 20 years of combat experience under her belt.
Yeah. Forever 10.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Which is, a big part of the story as well.
Yeah.
It's, she is physically and emotionally frozen at the age of 10.
Yeah.
And that's one of the...
isolating enough.
Right. It's one of the elements that, that I deal with very heavily in the story, which is, what is it like for somebody to watch the people around them grow old and die and stay unchanged, and not in like a vampire kind of way, because she's not, sucking the life force out of people.
Yeah.
She's just, they're moving on and they're changing and they're growing and they're maturing, and she isn't.
Yeah, it's like Vandal Savage minus the psychomaniac.
Exactly. It's hard. It takes a toll on her, because she's growing, mm-hmm. and she's expanding, but she isn't maturing because of certain elements of her condition.
Right. Man, that's rough. I mean, it's also pretty goddamn intriguing, but like right now I'm like, damn. Like, what else is there to say other than damn right now? But I'll change gears a little bit to Kickstarter itself, since that's the platform that you're using here. I mean, Sean, you guys utilized Kickstarter in the past for Fracture, and that worked out pretty well for you. And that was in it's amazing how fast Kickstarter grew, but I guess you could still say that was in the beginning days of Kickstarter. How much do you feel Kickstarter has changed since your initial Fracture campaign? Uh-huh. And do you think it's changed entirely in good ways or bad? Some bad, little A, little B?
Yeah, it's just a little A, little B. I mean, it definitely has changed since I got the Rally of the Troops to do the Action Lab Kickstarter for Fracture back in November 2010. And if you think about it, it's not that long ago.
Yeah.
It's not. And I remember when we set our goal and, doing all the things like, hopping on podcasts, using social media, and all these things to try to raise money and get people aware for it. Kickstarter was still young. I remember earlier in 2010 looking at Kickstarter, and I actually found it by accident. And it wasn't like through a Facebook post or a Twitter post. I just literally stumbled upon it. Yep, stumble upon, perfect example. I stumbled upon it, and I was like, what's this? So I started looking, and I didn't really understand it at first. This is, like I said, probably like January, I'll say around March 2010, mm-hmm. I think. And I was looking at it, and I said, well, can you like fund a comic book with this? Can you fund a film with this? I didn't really understand all the rules. So I just kind of like let it be, and I walked away from it. And then when the whole thing about getting Action Lab together started and trying to raise money for Fracture, I went back and I was like, oh, Kickstarter. Okay, I understand it now. Sometimes you just got to let your mind marinate on it. And then when you see it again, you get it. And then I got it. I said, okay, cool. But, It's a little bit different now. I mean, more people use it, so it is challenging now to try, for people to try to raise money for projects, depending on the amount of days they use, but Jamal is right. A lot of times the best way to go about it is to do the 30 day, the 30 day, you get in, you get out.
Right.
With us, we did, I think it was like 70 or 75 days for Fracture. Mm-hmm. And literally, we made it probably, I want to say, like a 10 days before the deadline. We hit it. Yeah. So, you know, and it was great, and I was happy about it. But still, you're competing with more projects now, and I'm not just talking comics. I mean comics, film, games.
Hardware.
Hardware. Yeah, hardware, clothing. People wanting to make restaurants. I mean, you name it. I mean, it's massive the amount of things that you're competing with now, and so you know, just trying to maintain your signal to the world about it is very important. So yeah, you're competing a lot more now than you were 2 years ago. That's like the really big difference. Interface wise, there are a couple like little different changes, but not too much. Still the primary function of Kickstarter is the same.
Yeah.
Now, as far as a negative, and they've tweaked it a little bit. Retailer incentives and like bulk ordering. It used to be, you know, if you had no matter what type of project it was, comics, games, whatever have you, you could do like a big old bulk, have a big bulk pledge. Like, say, for instance, let's say I wanted to have a pledge tier that said 100 copies of my book X and la da 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 for this for this pledge. Mm-hmm. Well, you can't do that anymore. As a matter of fact, they cut off all quote unquote bulk or retailer incentives for a couple of days right in the beginning of Jamal's Kickstarter. And it wasn't just Jamal; it was a lot of other people too that got hit too.
Yeah.
But still, you know, it's like a punch in the gut because you know, everything was fine. You set everything up, and everybody's like, "Okay, you're good to go. Run!" And then they grab your shoestring, like, "Oh, hold up, son."
There was nothing more disturbing than waking up the morning that I got that email from Kickstarter, just like, "What? What did I do? Right. Did I do something wrong? I thought I read the rules. Okay.
You can do your campaign, and I'm gonna let you finish your campaign."
Yeah.
they came in just like Kanye, and then like when they got done, they just threw the mic on the ground. But at least they kind of, you know, they switched it up a bit. I guess they, you know, they. I'm not saying they got a backlash, but I'm sure somebody really sat down and thought about it for a second and said, hey, okay, let's at least meet some of these folks halfway.
Yeah.
So right. Now, you know, you can do a bulk order, but it can't be any more than 10 copies of something.
Mm-hmm. Which is what we had originally for the retailer incentives anyway.
Yeah.
So it was just a matter of just turning them back on.
Right, exactly. And now they're back on, and everything is cool. And another thing that I've noticed since Kickstarter has started, I mean, you're starting to get the creators, well-known creators like Jamal Igel, Jimmy Palmiotti, Gail Simone, and Jim, is it Califiore?
Califiore, yeah.
Yes. They have a Kickstarter now. I mean, you're starting to see more, you know, well-known comic professionals, you know, put projects out there, but you're also starting to see more, you know, also see innovative comics projects out there. Like, say, for instance, the Bottom of the Ninth comic, which is, you know, part animation, part comic. I mean, it's beautiful. As a matter of fact, it's free on iTunes right now. You can get the first issue, which is, I think, it's like a 12-page teaser. But he just started a Kickstarter. Mm-hmm. So you are competing with so many different things, and you know, and then you go with the whole PvP thing.
Penny Arcade.
You know,
Penny Arcade.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Thank you. Always get the PvP and Penny Arcade stuff mixed because they both have the letter P.
And PvP is part of the Penny Arcade network, so that's I guess technically you're half right when you say PvP.
Well, you're right, though. It is Penny Arcade.
Yeah.
So I apologize. That's my bad. But, you know, there was a big uproar with people because, you know, the PvP people put out a Kickstarter, and a lot of
Penny
people
Arcade.
Just thought. So see, I did it again. See how fucked up that is? Penny Arcade. Okay. Penny Arcade people put out a Kickstarter, caught a lot of backlash from people because some, you know, they felt that the rewards were ludicrous, or for what they were trying to accomplish, it just seemed like a money grab. And the thing is, I looked at it like this. I saw it as a thing of they've been doing this for like a long time. Yeah, they have their own conventions, so I'm sure they're making money that way too. But from a business standpoint, if somebody's going to pay for it, it's just like reality television. for some reason, there's somebody always watching it, and I don't know why. And I don't mean that as a derogatory slam towards Penny Arcade. I don't. I'm just saying there is a customer for almost everything. And so there are probably a lot of people who say, you know what, I read a lot of Penny Arcade for free for a bunch of years. Let me give them something.
Yeah.
And so that's why I wasn't really torn up about it, because that's the one thing about Kickstarter. You can do whatever you want to do as long as Amazon/American Express approves.
Right.
So if they approve, then, hey, it's open game. It's open game. So, you know, the challenges are out there, but, you know, a great project will get funded. And,
oh, yeah.
You know, and I looked at it like this, and I talked with Jamal a couple of times about this. It's all about pacing yourself. Like, you know, within 1 week, within the first week of the Kickstarter, the Molly Danger Kickstarter has reached a 25% goal. So the next week, which would be like the 15th, we hope to get at, you know, 50%. And then on the 22nd, we hope to be at 75%. And then by the 29th, you hope to be at 100% with 2 days to go, because this thing shuts down August 31st, peoples. August 31st. So this isn't like a uber long marathon. We ain't running no 20 miles or anything like that. You know, we're running around the block.
Yeah.
So, and that's the one thing I try to emphasize to people, not to make them stress, not to make them worry. It's just that this is a very concise, pledge time.
Yeah.
Pledge time is very concise. So we're hoping if we can maintain and continue to spread the word and keep these goals and target hit these goals, everything will be fine. And, people who donate will receive really cool items, whether it be a hardcover book or a digital version of the book or a membership card or a commission. And a lot of it's like a combination of things, too. And you could just like donate the biggest bunch of cash ever and get 38 of the original artwork pages from Molly Danger, which is major. I mean, because a lot of artists don't come off their pages now, especially for something they love.
Yeah, seriously, I wish I had that kind of dough. Trust me, or else.
Oh no, I wish I had that kind of dough. Okay, please believe I would have that in my house. Like, I got Jamal's pages up in this piece. So it's something. Like I said before, it's something for everybody. And the one other key thing that we had talked about when Jamal was trying to get this going was, just the levels of tiers. There's affordability. So there is something for everybody. Yes, you have the higher tiers, but you also have the nice price tiers too. It's a nice balance. My favorite word ever, balance. So, like I said, like I said 100 times, there is something for everyone with this Kickstarter. Yes.
Yeah. Well, and the way I look at Kickstarter, this one in particular is great for comic fans, okay, because, and that's the way I feel about 30-day Kickstarters in general when it comes to comic fans, is because comic fans, at least devoted comic fans, are used to the 30-day cycle. Because when do we need to get our orders in by? Usually we have 30 days to get our orders in by. So if something looks good, you're going to put it on your sheet, and you're either going to go to your store, you're going to go to DCBS, or you're going to go to however else you buy your comics, and within that 30-day period, you're going to submit that, and then you've bought the comic. You know, that's the way that goes. That's the way I look at a Kickstarter campaign like this. Oh, it's 30 days. That means I have 30 days to put my money down and wait, you know, hopefully it'll get funded by the time that 30 days are over. Better damn well get funded, because I know where your people live. But but still, you know, that's exactly right for comic fans, that 30-day window. The other thing is with Kickstarter, and going back to Penny Arcade and going back to the other, you know, big names and stuff like that, and I do agree with you very much, Sean, that if you have a good product, people are going to back it. But with Penny Arcade, the whole reason I feel like people were bashing the project were the folks that didn't understand the project. They thought that it was, oh, we're going to run the site without ads for a year. And that's not actually what the Kickstarter was, because they set all those multiple goals. What they were trying to do is, yes, they're trying to run it without ads. That's the least part of the equation. They wanted to be able to do material entirely for the fans and for themselves, as opposed to having to worry about writing something for this person or drawing something for this person in order to get advertising in exchange or so on and so forth. You know, they wanted to be able to devote an entire year to their own projects to try and make themselves more fan friendly as opposed to advertiser friendly, which I completely support, because for one, I'm a fan of Penny Arcade, so yeah, duh. You know, and the other thing is if it allows them to put out quality material in the process, bam, that's it. That's exactly what Kickstarter is supposed to be for. It doesn't matter how big or small you are. And yes, that's a problem with the name Kickstarter, is because people hear the word Kickstarter and they're like, oh, we've never heard of you, so that's why you're on Kickstarter. But I don't think that has to be the reason to run a Kickstarter. I feel like You can do so much with the product, and that's what Penny Arcade's doing, that's what Gail Simone's doing, that's what this lovely man Jamal Igle is doing, you know?
Right. And see, but remember this, another reason why a lot of people, I think, gave them flack was because a while ago they did a strip where they, basically kind of mocked Kickstarter.
Yes.
So I don't think that really helped their cause much either. But
understandable. Penny Arcade mocks everything under the sun, so there's that. But
yeah. I'm sorry, what were you saying, Jamal?
I didn't realize that was what was going on with Penny Arcade.
Oh yeah, it was kind of crazy, man. Like, folks were like in upheaval. So, but like nowadays when the internet goes in upheaval, I just turn it off.
Right,
I just turn it off because it just gets a little cray cray sometimes.
Yeah.
So yeah.
I'm used to uprisings, whether it be about Penny Arcade or chicken.
We're not going there, man. We're not talking. Come on, man. Look,
but you're in the bastion of Chick-fil-A anyway. So.
Yeah. I don't have to worry about Chick-fil-A, man. I'm in Brooklyn. We don't have Chick-fil-A.
Exactly. I didn't eat Chick-fil-A when I lived in L.A. I hear it's good. I've never eaten Chick-fil-A, so it doesn't hurt me.
We got a joint around these parts called Cane's, and they're everywhere. They're popping up everywhere. I mean, everywhere. Right. But it's just kind of crazy. But no, crap. I just
guess with Five Guys, you know.
Oh, don't get me started with Five Guys. Like we got like a lot of burger joints around here too. Five Guys, we got like two of those. We got a few smash burger joints around this piece. Plus, we got some local burger joints. And it's like Lexington just wants to make you fat. You know what I'm saying? So I really try to cook at home like between 4 to 5 nights a week.
Yep.
So because if I don't, I'm going to – it's just going to be over. I'm going to have high cholesterol, the diabetes, all that stuff. And I'm trying not to go there. So yeah, Lexington has some wonderful food. For any of those listening to this podcast right now, 2013, come to the Lexington Toy and Comic-Con. It is going to be huge. I mean, huge. It was huge this year. I mean, it was amazing. The only reason why I say it is a couple reasons. One, I'll be there. Jamal Igle will be there. Like Action Lab will be there. Martheus Wade will be there. But not only will you see all these cool comics and toys and like celebrities and all this other stuff, we got food for days. If you leave Lexington hungry, you have a fucking problem. Mm-hmm. That's all I'm going to say.
Yep.
We got food for days up in this piece. So come on down to Lexington. It is one of the progressive cities, or progressive towns. So black people, don't be afraid. And, I don't care what your race, denomination, whatever it is, Lexington is a beautiful place. Come on down and visit. Eat you some good food. Tell them Sean sent you. It ain't going to take nothing off your bill. But, but yeah, but no, seriously, it's a beautiful place. It's a beautiful place. But see, I have steered us off the track. So Ian, put us back on the track.
Right after I say the words Nathan's and Shake Shack. All right, so... It's all you need here in New York.
I gotta say, I have actually come around on Shake Shack.
Yeah,
like I was all about In-N-Out, but since you can't get In-N-Out on the East Coast, yep, gotta go with Shake Shack.
Oh yeah, Oh yeah, no. It's
second. The second by Lucky Burger. Lucky Burger's good too.
I've never had Lucky Burger. I should go.
You should. There's one on 23rd and 8th. You should check it out. It's actually really good.
23rd. You know, I passed by it so many times, I've never gotten it. All right, we'll get back on track here. We'll talk about Kickstarter again. So, community-wise, I mean, since you've got individuals backing this, do you feel that there's, I guess, more interaction between the individual backers and you, the creator, than there would be with other ways of putting a book out?
Oh, absolutely. Because you're not putting it out in a vacuum. You know, you are, in my case, because it's still very early in the process of getting the actual physical book done. It's a show of faith on the part of the people who are donating to the Kickstarter. And, you know, I really try to stay as active and as responsible. I mean, I'm normally active and responsible, responsive, I should say.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, I don't know about that second one, man.
Responsible.
Yeah. You are a responsible adult.
Yes, I am. So, but, you know, I'm even more active with, you know, since I started running a Kickstarter, mm-hmm. because it requires that much more attention on an almost hourly basis, mm-hmm. rather than, you know, just a daily basis. I think probably like the first 3 or 4 hours of my day is just, you know, social media, Kickstarter related stuff. So,
and it's easy to do because I'm looking here, like I don't even know how they freaking do this. Like without the page even refreshing, it tells you updates, which. Amazon, you're freaking me out here, man. Like seriously, like you have little gnomes inside of my browser that are doing this because this technology, it scares me. No, I mean, since we've been talking here, you got yourself two more backers. We're up to 11,515. So that's so far so good with 23 days to go. I feel like I feel like Jerry Lewis. Like any minute now, the dancing girls are going to come out, and then some comedian that's going to talk for 25 minutes when he should have talked for 5.
Followed by a performance from Full Force.
Oh. Or Wailing Flowers and Madam.
Yes. Oh, not Wailing. Oh, not Madam. Oh, man, that's an 80s flashback right there. You remember when they gave Madam her own TV show?
Yes, I do. Very much.
What was it called? Like, was it like Madam's House or something like that? Some crazy shit.
Here's Madam or something like that.
They gave her a show. Like, she lived in a house and she had these other girls that lived in the house. I'm like, is this some type of cracked up version of Facts of Life? What the fuck is this? This is what I loved about the 80s because they would give any concept, any celebrity. They would get a show. I mean, not dealing with the bullshit reality stuff of the 2000s where everybody gets a spinoff show. I'm talking about actual television. Mm-hmm. Wolfman Jack had a fucking cartoon. A fucking DJ.
Why did you do that to me, man? Why did you do that to me?
Hey, man, I got to remind the people that's what I do. I mean, come on, man. Listen, people forget. Marvel was heavily involved in cartoons in the 80s, sometimes with the Cadence Company and sometimes with some other companies.
Yep.
You know, I heard that they actually created Meatballs and Spaghetti. You remember that cartoon, that Rock Band, Meatballs and Spaghetti?
I actually vaguely remember that myself, probably in reruns on some, like, you know, like Channel 11 or something like that.
I may be wrong in this, but if you go back and look at some of your old comics and like when they used to do, like they had
the two-page spread.
Yes. Oh my God. Yeah, they would have the ad right there, and it would have all those cartoons, and there would be like little trademarks underneath all the properties. Mm-hmm. Go look at Meatballs and Spaghetti, and I swear it says like trademark Marvel Entertainment or something like that.
Speaking of which, I love the Marvel mashups at the end of Avengers: Earth's Mightiest Heroes. Where they go and redub the old Marvel 60s and 80s cartoons.
Right.
Those are fan-damn-tastic because my favorite one is from the Fantastic Four one from the 60s where the leader keeps putting his hand out over and over again. Sorry, the wizard keeps putting his hand out. So they go, okay, all right, we're going to rock, paper, scissors this. Okay, ready? Rock, paper. No, no. Come on. Do it with me. Do it with me. Okay, one more time. Rock, paper. Are you listening?
That is...
Yeah, but talking 80s too, man. Like, I love the 80s flair in Molly. Like, that is straight up, like, you could fit her right into, like, Punky Brewster era or any of that stuff right there, man. It is right up my wheelhouse.
Well, you know what? That's how little girls dress even now. Uh-huh. Like, if you see, like, that's how my daughter dresses. That's mm-hmm. how, like, when little girls dress themselves, they put on big boots and big jackets and layer themselves in clothes yep. and too much jewelry and, you know, barrettes and hair accessories. I mean, that is, you know, the whole idea was, what would a 10-year-old dress herself like if she wanted to look like a superhero?
Uh-huh.
And that's, the design has not changed in a decade.
And a pink Avengers jacket.
Exactly.
Team jackets are awesome.
Yes.
Team jackets are awesome. I love the jacket personally. I remember, you don't front. You wanted one of those Xavier School leather jackets.
Oh, you know.
Oh, yes, I did. Yes.
Still kind of do.
You know what? See, and here's the thing. Like, all the team jackets were dope in comics. But, like, the Avengers had to find a way to fuck it up in the 90s when they had them brown team jackets. Because I love team jackets. But see, here's the thing. If you're going to put a team in, like, team jackets, that better be the tightest team out there in the universe. Because if you're trying to sell me gear like Carl Kanai, and you got 90s Hercules, Crystal, and Teen Tony, and all these other scrubby characters on a team, how you going to sell me team jackets? You can't sell me team jackets.
No, because they were rocking the team jacket when Black Knight and Gilgamesh were on the team.
And Thunderstrike.
Yeah, Thunderstrike and Circe.
That's not legit. And see, I like all the renditions of the Black Knight, even when he couldn't cut nobody with the sword unless it was a robot. Mm. But but the thing is, it's like, you could have put them in FUBU, and I still would have bought it. I refuse, because that team was just jukey. But I love team jackets. Team jackets are great. So it got me hyped.
And if you pledge $20,000 to the Molly Danger, we will give you a Molly Danger team jacket. There, bam!
Emblazoned in platinum. So.
with giant thank you and diamonds on the back.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Are you kidding? But here's the thing. It's when I started reworking the concept, I actually thought about, like, you know, changing the costume, making it sleeker, making it more, you know, up to date. Well, not up to date. That's a bad turn of phrase. More modern, more similar to, you know, the designs that, you know, a lot of people are doing now, minus, you know, the Brian Hitch ribbing, which, you know, can't blame the man. He came up with that. Everybody else is copying.
Oh, of course.
So, but I really looked at it and I said to myself, you know what? It's fine the way it is. It works. It has its own quality to it.
Yep. And it screams little girl.
It screams little girl. And, you know, one of the biggest, there's two elements to it. One of the biggest rules that I ever learned about branding is that you should be able to recognize a character in a silhouette.
Yep.
Yes.
And Molly has the look that Molly has a very defined silhouette to it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, so it works on that level. And, you know, it is all about, you know, it ties into the story as well. There are, on Molly's costume, if I remember, let's say 2, 4, 6, 7... 8, 9, 10, 11 M's. 11 Molly logos on that costume, including the back of the jacket.
so she got fashion tips from the X-Men, right on.
Exactly.
You know, how many places can we put an X? An X over there, X over there, X over there, X over there, X on the ass, all right.
But again, it goes back to that whole idea. Like,
yeah.
what... would a little girl look like if she were designing her own costume?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And right now, Cable is calling Molly like, listen, I need you to help me find a way to put more pouches on my shirt. All right? I need to know.
And Deadpool was like, can you get me a pink jacket in my size?
No, but we could get you a t-shirt.
Yes. Yes. There are some affordable pledges, man. And one of those, yeah, it's like $25, you get a t-shirt.
There's the small and medium is 20, and then large to 25.
now we do have two questions asked from the audience, and these are two very serious questions that need to be addressed.
All right.
So here's the first one coming in from Big Jim Dietz of the Legion of Dudes podcast. How do Jamal and Sean stay so awesome? Who wants to cover it first? That's up to you guys.
Well, Sean's just awesome anyway. So yeah,
y'all are far too kind. Far too kind. You know what, man? Look, you know what? Through everything we do, whether it be myself, Jamal, no matter what we do, we stay humble. We stay grounded, and that's to me. That keeps me focused and it keeps me determined. Because regardless of what goes on with any project that I know that like I'm a part of, or any team that I'm a part of, you got to stay humble, and you just got to stay humble. You got to stay focused, and you just got to be you. DMX said it best, and this was pre drugged out DMX, but he used to have this saying called "Do you." And by that, he just meant be yourself.
Yep.
Well, you got to say it right. You got to, do you, son, do you?
Oh, yeah, followed by that. Followed by that.
DMX.
Hey, don't get me started. I will start screaming. And, like, my wife is watching the Olympics right now on tape delay. She will, like, come in here and be like, what the fuck is wrong with you? Because I will start screaming what real loud like DMX used to.
What's that? I got Sean to do something very, very loud.
That's a common on Comic Timing.
Booyah.
Between Brent Cassina snoring and leaving his mic on, or sleeping during an episode, getting me riled up, or Ian, hey man, you want to talk about Superman Returns? And it's just like it's over. Lights out. But in all seriousness, it's just that, we appreciate, Jim, his kind words and everything. And like anybody that has that talks to us and stuff like that, we just stay humble.
Yep.
And we stay rooted in who we are. We try to spread that to other people. The one thing about the comics business is that there are good people in it, but they're hard to find. Because like in any form of business, there are a lot of assholes.
Yep.
And like I've met a lot of those assholes, and I'm talking about, and like I'm still, look, I'm just me. I'm nobody famous. I'm nobody popular. I'm just a dude that wants to see other people succeed, and I want to make comics and in other forms of entertainment. Okay, that's what I want to do for a living. Period. Okay, I'm tired of fixing computers for a living. People, all right. you know what I'm saying? But like but I do it because I got bills to pay. And I have, and I have a wife that I have a house, we got bills to pay and stuff like that. So you just put that work in, but you just try to be good to people, man. You really do. And if people do you wrong, you just, you handle your business and don't deal with those people anymore. But, it's like I said, just stay humble.
Barocco Comics, ladies and gentlemen, Barocco Comics.
Here, here.
The other question is from some guy named Darrell Taylor. I don't know who this guy is. Why does Sean Pryor hate Ewoks?
You know what, Daryl? Let me tell you something. Because you're going to listen to this podcast, and you're probably like laughing right now because, this question got on the air. I told you. And I'm going to tell you this one last goddamn time. Quit asking bullshit-ass questions like that. I don't hate Ewoks. I don't. As a kid, I never hated the Ewoks. Got a little older. I started to resent them a bit. But... But then I turned back around the age of when I was like 35 and said, man, these motherfuckers ain't that bad. I watched the Ewoks cartoon. I dealt with it. I watched the two Ewoks those two live action Ewoks movies when I was a kid, and I enjoyed the shit because that was all the new Star Wars shit we was ever gonna have. So I just enjoyed it and I dealt with it and I appreciate it. This is the man. This is the man who hates everything fun. I don't know why he's asking this question.
Hates the goddamn Muppets.
A man who hates the Muppets. A man who hates Muppets asking me why do I hate Ewoks. Does this make sense, people? No, it does not. So, Daryl, to answer your question, I don't hate Ewoks. Please stop asking me these bullshit questions on other podcasts. I love you. You need some help, or you might need Jesus. I don't know. But I love you, but thank you for asking that question.
To
reiterate, and to say it in a way that Daryl will understand.
Uh-oh.
God damn it, Smokey. Nobody cares. Leave it alone.
Now, Jamal, what are your thoughts on Ewoks? Do you feel that they are a terror that needs to be wiped out by the Empire? Your thoughts.
The Ewoks are the greatest threat to civilized society that I've ever known in my life, Larry. I don't know how to say it any worse. They're worse than the Taliban. They're worse than Al-Qaeda. They are worse than Ultimatum. They must be wiped out. They are a scourge.
Fantastic. Walter from Kalamazoo, you're on.
Yeah, he called out Ultimatum. He was like the Yub Yub song was hotter than Ultimatum.
Oh, I would frickin' agree with that, man, every single way. And goddamn it, that Man of Steel trailer sucked. But that's,
yes, it does.
All I'm saying, man. There's a reason I made a parody of that shit, because that was completely the exact same thing as "It's Halftime, America."
you know, there was some San Diego Comic-Con footage that was out there that actually showed actual clips of Superman doing stuff and everything. That looked fantastic.
Yeah, why couldn't they release that?
I don't know, dude. I don't know. I have no idea. I couldn't even tell you if my life depended on it.
So. Oh, boy. Get on this, Jamal. You're still in with the DC guys. You know what? Just punch them in the face a couple times, all right? Do that for me.
They don't care.
Eh.
They don't care. They're just trying to keep their jobs.
Actually hear the violin in the background. Okay.
You know, the moment somebody up at Warner Brothers said, "Hey, we're going to reboot Superman. Let's get the guy who made Watchmen crash and burn."
Hey, the director's cut ain't that bad.
I'm not even going to bother.
I'm just saying, it ain't that bad.
No, let me put it to you this way.
Yeah.
It took me a week to decide whether or not I liked Watchmen.
Mm.
A week after I saw it.
I feel you.
And I ultimately had to say, no, I didn't like it. They tried, but I didn't like it. And then Sucker Punch came out.
And you got Sucker Punch.
Zack Snyder. Fuck you in your ear.
Still better than Raph taking six times to hate Superman Returns, but that's another story for another day. All right. Gentlemen, it has yet again been an absolute pleasure to have you guys on my air. I love talking to you guys, and I am going to do my best to make it down to Baltimore Comic-Con for at least a day.
Yes, please do.
Because it has been too long, and I need to bullshit over a couple of brews and a burger or two.
Yes.
Because I feel like I missed out on that this year, and I need my Jamal and Sean time. That's all I'm saying. Jamal, I'll start off with you, because you actually have some stuff currently on the stands or close to the stands. So if you would like to pimp your wares and then reiterate on the Molly Danger and all that jazz.
Okay, well, let's see. Kiss number 2 came out last month, so mm-hmm. Kiss 1 and 2 are out on the stands. And then I'm actually going to be doing covers for Kiss 5 and 6.
Ooh, nice.
Also, I also have another cover that I just finished today that I can't say who it's for just yet. But I'm also finishing up an issue of Smallville for DC, Smallville number 6, which will be out on the stand digitally first and then on the stands in October. And then other than Molly, which hopefully we will have a very good announcement about the state of Molly Danger when we hit Baltimore.
Sincerely.
But but I'm also going to be announcing another creator-owned project at Baltimore Comic Con.
Right on. Nice.
Which will actually come out before Molly.
Ooh. Well, then. I am intrigued now. I would like to subscribe to this newsletter. And con-wise, you'll be at New York. I know that.
Yes, I'll be at Baltimore. I'll be at New York. I'm going to the Rhode Island Comic Con this year, also in Providence, Rhode Island, in November. I'm also doing the Women of Wonder Day at Comic Fusion in Flemington, New Jersey, in October as well. Like the week, I think that's the week before for NYCC.
Okay, cool.
So.
Nice. So if for some reason I don't make it to Baltimore, I can at least see you in New York. And that's,
of course,
what matters, of course. And is there a like a tiny URL or anything like that people can go to for the Kickstarter? Or just
Yeah, you can go to mollydanger.com.
Fantastic.
And it gets to the Kickstarter page from there.
Awesome. Okay, remember that, people. mollydanger.com. It's spelled the normal way, so you can't possibly get lost on the internet on the way. Unless you put a space somewhere. I work in tech support. I know this. And Mr. Sean Pryor, let the world know what you do.
All right. Here's the deal. I help run a comic book company called Action Lab Entertainment. You can find our list of comics that we have published and continue to publish at actionlabcomics.com. You can also purchase our comics on our website, whether they be print or digital. You can also get our books digitally at Comics Plus. You can get them in the iBookstore for the Nook or the Kindle. You can also find them at drivethroughcomics.com, mydigitalcomics.com, and if you live in Australia, Cloud9 Comics with an X. So you can get them through various ways and means. Right now, Double Jumpers number 3 is available for pre-order.
Nice.
So if you go to dcbservice.com, tfall.com, or go to your local comic book store and say, listen, I would like Double Jumpers number 3 for mature readers, you can pre-order a copy right now. And all of us at Action Lab would be more than ecstatic about it and more than happy about it. We got a lot in the works in Action Lab over the next few months and over the next year or so. A lot of great things happening. When you come to Baltimore Comic Con, when you come to the Action Lab booth, there will be a set time where Jamal will be doing a signing. He will be signing Molly Danger posters at Baltimore Comic Con at the Action Lab booth area. So be on the lookout for that. A majority of the Action Lab family will be there. So be on the lookout for that. I will try not to body slam or kick anybody in the face while I'm there.
I try.
I'm going to be on my best behavior. But to those that are interested in donating to the Molly Danger Kickstarter for Jamal Igel, let me break it down like this. I know that when Jamal did the Supergirl book, he did the art for Supergirl. It had a lot of fans, had really good numbers. If each of those people that bought a copy of Supergirl, and I'm sure most of them have a book that they spend $4 a month on that they can't stand, but they continue to buy it because it's either part of their collection or they just can't get out of the cycle or they just want to have something to complain about. If they take 1 month off from buying said book and add a dollar to it and donate $5, this Kickstarter would automatically be funded.
Yep.
But I mean, I'm just saying, I'm not trying to guilt anybody. I'm just trying to make a point. And because I know a lot of people love Jamal's art, and this is something that I think, everybody should get behind. Like I said, Jamal's a great dude. He's a great artist. He's a hell of a talent. And, he's got wonderful people working on this book. Not only is it Jamal, but Juan Castro is going to be doing inks. And then Juan Castro works on the G.I. Joe books for IDW. So, and a gentleman by the name of Mr. Watkins is doing the colors, right?
Yeah, Mike Watkins. He's also an IDW guy. He's worked on Transformers. He's worked on Sonic the Hedgehog, So, it's a lineup, and we're still lining up, letterers and book designers, and this is going to be a completely professionally put together product. You're talking, between the entire creative team and everybody involved at Action Lab, you're talking about a good 40 to 50 years worth of experience in putting these books together. So, you're looking at what I really want to be just the one of the greatest reading experiences that you have and give you one of the most beautiful single volumes that you could possibly own.
In a European style.
Yes,
European style.
In European style, yes. And when you get it, you will enjoy it. You might even do the safety dance. I don't know.
I will have to do it over tea and crumpets just to feel like I am 100% in the European style. and Sean, along with that, the PKD podcast.
Yes, the PKD Black Box still running strong. You can get that at hhwlod.com. It also carries the PKD Black Box network of podcasts. Also includes the Tales from the Attic podcast, where Donnie Salvo hops into his long box of comics and tells you a tale of yesteryear in his own comedic way. Along with, there's also the Carol Chronicles podcast, which will be making a comeback in August. And that talks about, you know, tech stuff, sport stuff, wrestling, and whatnot. PKD Black Box is still running strong. You know, except we had an interview with Jamal not too long ago and Alan White. He was discussing his Kickstarter as well. And we will continue to do, you know, podcasts on a biweekly basis. In October, get ready for movie month, and we're going to have new episodes all week. Every single week, like every single Wednesday for like five straight weeks. So be on the lookout for that. And as far as me personally, there are going to be some major, major changes for me personally at the beginning of the year. I can't tell you what those changes are going to be, but it's going to be a really good thing for me personally. And I'm really excited about it, and I'm going to be doing things that I never really have done before. And I'm also going to do something that I'm looking forward to hopping back onto, just to kind of give it a nice little close, if it were. But you know, I'm really excited about these last couple years, like being involved with Action Lab and being able to work with gentlemen like Jamal Heigl and colleagues, you know, like Jamal, and just spreading the word about stuff like this. Like I said, I love comics. It's one of the greatest things in the world, and we just want to continue to prove to people that comics are a viable form of literature, and they're a great thing. So, you know, let's reach out and let's support this Kickstarter, and just continue to make it spread and grow and grow and grow. And let's make this something big, and let's make this something memorable, because the people need Molly. And because she's the hero that we've all been waiting for.
Word. Any other cons other than Baltimore? Or?
Baltimore is it for me this year, man? Okay, I'm shutting it down after Baltimore. Right, it's really just the thing of affordability. I mean,
gotcha.
I'm supposed to go on tour next year with Action Lab, and so I got to get my money right.
Sweet.
I'm going to be in a lot of places acting a fool. I need to be fiscally set, because if not, my wife's going to look at me like, no. Your ass ain't going nowhere, son.
Yep.
So
I feel that, and I just go to cons as a spectator, so I feel that. All right, real quick, dcbservice.com is the sponsor. Use the promo code CT8 if you have not been there before to get an additional 8% off on your first order. And Double Jumpers number 3 is indeed available right now, 30% off of the regular price of $3.99 for $2.79. And some other discounts real quick here. A plus X number 1, 75% off for only 99 cents. Adventure Time number 2, the second printing, is on sale for 82% off at 70 cents. God damn it, I'm going to freaking buy that book. That's ridiculous. That's redonkulous even. Age of Apocalypse is 70 cents too. Oh, I got so many freaking deals that I can't even list them right now. DCBS, DCBService.com. We thank them for support. CT8, 8% off. Yada, yada, yada. The email address for Comic Timing is comictiming@gmail.com. Don't forget to check out the forums over at comicforums.com. We're not on there anymore for the most part, but they're still awesome, and I want you guys to support them. We're at facebook.com/comictiming. That's our main form of conversation with you folks these days. And we're proud members of the Comics Podcast Network over at comicspodcast.com and the League of Comic Book Podcasts over at comicbooknoise.com/league. Once again, Jamal, an honor and a pleasure, sir.
Thank you, sir. It was great being on the show again.
Right on. And Sean, man, I managed to not make you Hulk out.
And I appreciate that. I appreciate it. You know, we just save it for next time.
Yeah, damn right we will.
We just save it for next time. But, you know, next time we record will be after San Diego Comic Con 2013 and after the Tell 'Em Why You Mad panel. and like, the rage would just be on, man. I would just be ready. I'm telling you, I will have theme music and the whole nine ready to go.
Drop the mic. And as always, there's always time for comics.
I'm you know, I'm about to start knocking on doors and telling people to donate to the Kickstarter.
I would do that in my neighborhood, but I might get shot.
You would get shot in your neighborhood.
It's like, hello, have you heard of Kick? All right, man. It's all right. It's all right.
Yes, they'll kick you in the chest.
Ah! Usually in the Skype tools or anywhere.
Use the tools.
That means peace.
Yeah. Hey, Ian, can you hear me better now?
I can, yes.
Okay, yes. See on the Mac, because I just found it too. Stupid damn Mac version of Skype. If you go to Skype, go preferences, and then there's like a box that'll open with like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 tabs. Click audio and video, and make sure that your input is set. Your microphone is set to the correct input.
Right.
Because for ages, and now that would explain why I sounded so tingy on other people's shit, is because Skype just said, oh, man, we know you got a USB microphone, but you know what? Fuck you, dude. Use the Mac mic instead.
You know, this all makes sense, because now you sound as good as you did when you first started coming on my show.
Good old Skype. Upgrade? Oh, you don't need those settings.
No.
But fuck you, dude.
Mac users, please.
You guys don't matter. I mean, come on.
About to put Megaforce on their ass.